up that are a little interesting. I'll just bring them up, though obviously I can't fully explore them. One question is malpractice. So the Tosefta writes, which is quoted in our simon, Rofe Uman Sheripe Birshos Beistin, a expert doctor, presumably somebody today who's licensed, who practices medicine, behizik, and in the course of treating a patient, harmed the patient. Pater, b'shogi pater b'mezid chayev, mipnei tikkun olam. So why do we need a tikkun olam? So the answer is that we don't need a tikkun olam that he's chayev b'mezid. We need the tikkun olam to say he's pater b'shogi. And the reason is because we always assume adam uod liolam. So therefore, since adam uod liolam, it would be, even if I accident, if a doctor, Mikra Adin, would commit malpractice, even if it's Bishogeg, so then he would be Chayev. So they were Metakein, for obvious reasons, otherwise everybody would be afraid to practice medicine, that Bishogeg, you're Pater, as long as you repay your Shos based in. The Tosefta also says, a different Tosefta, that if you Rofi Uman Sharipi Rishos Basin Vihizik Potter, Chaval Yoser Min Haraoi Hareza Chayev. So what does Chaval Yoser Min Haraoi mean? So it means that there was a lack of Zahiras. And the Poskim explained that's Kamezid. So if there was a lack of Zahiras, so then he's Chayev. If it's Shogeg, meaning to say there was no lack of Zahiras, then he's Potter. Obviously, figuring that out lemaisa isn't always so easy. The Beis Yosef, though, also points out in our simon that this is bidei adam, but bidei shamayim, so af medine elashenu pater medine shamayim at shishalem hanezek v'yigale al hamisa ha'wil v'noda shata v'hizik o hemis b'yadayim. So perhaps there's still a chiyuv of latzis bidei shamayim even in cases where you're pater midene adam. Another question that comes up over here is accepting money for medical treatment. So it should be aser. Why? Mani b'china, mafatam b'china. You're not allowed to charge money for doing mitzvos. Practicing medicine is a mitzvah. Thou shivos alo, the rabos avedas gufo. Therefore, it should be aser to charge medicine for charge money for practicing medicine. And that's the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch and Sif Beis and Shin Lamed Vav. Harofei aser li tal schar chachma v'alimud, aval schar hatorach v'abatal az mutter. So schar chachma and limud is aser, schar torach and batal az mutter. So applying this in contemporary times is difficult. One kula that some of the poskim say is that nowadays, at least this would work in America, you can, assuming you have a busy practice, you could basically charge whatever you can charge based off of the idea that it's batala demuchach. Why? Because I could have non-Jewish patients. There's no iser to charge akum. So memela, it's always going to be batala demuchach, meaning to say, if it's, what does char batala normally mean? Char batala normally, if you have a doctor who makes $200,000 a year, if you make $200,000 a year doing something else, and then it's schar batala. But let's say he can't, right? If he's not going to practice medicine, so okay, he could bag groceries at a supermarket, but that's not going to justify $200,000. But if we could say that, well, his schar batala, he could take only non-Jewish patients, so maybe that would be schar batala, and therefore that would justify whatever the normal rates are. That's what some poskim say. There are Rishonim that have certain kulas here. For example, the Ri is talking, it's in Tosus and Ksubos on Kofei, talking about judges accepting money. So Rabbeinu Tam says over there, which has a similar issue, Mishum de lo asar elami bali dinim, aval hacha mishel tzibur, it's mutter. The question is, how would that apply in terms of medicine? But the Ri has a kula, which some poskim say we could rely on. The Rebbe Mefarish, Dehacha la b'tar schar hayu notlin, Elahacha kol shah hayu yoshim b'din, hayu oskim b'shum alacha, ולא היה להם במלס פרנס, וימוטל על הציבור לפרנסן. Now, according to the RE, the community has a responsibility to pay for doctors, and in other words, the prohibition is talking about cases where somebody has another job, and somebody asks them, you know, can you cure me, can you help me? So then he has a chiyuv to do it. In this case, where this is your full-time job, so if you didn't do this, then you wouldn't be able to practice medicine, and the community needs doctors. So maybe it's mutar al hatzibur. Now, that would permit, let's say, a situation where the government pays doctors. What about in the modern case? So, not clear. There's a whole lot of literature on this topic. I saw Rabbi Avram Steinberg tries to make the argument that it's permitted, regular medical fees are permitted to compensate him for the liability from malpractice suits. I don't know why that would justify charging more than the malpractice insurance. But anyway, it's an interesting shaila, but not for now. One, under what circumstances doctors can charge for medicine, practicing medicine. This is, b'etzem, it's a shaila on a lot of things that people do professionally for mitzvahs, like teach Torah, and the like. Some of the heterim are the same, some of them might be different.
What you're saying about if the government is going to change the equation into socialist...
Maybe. Certainly, according to the RE, you could argue that would be okay. Yeah?
Just explain again, the fellow in Utah, why would it be that if a person would help, a person could make an argument, or if I were to help Jews, I could be helping Jews, but instead I'm only helping non-Jews? That's not like a regular thing. Maybe just explain the concept again.
Schar batala is if I could be getting, let's say I have two jobs. I'm a doctor. It has to be realistic. So, but if I could have other patients that I'm permitted to charge.
You write that you can charge Jews and non-Jews.
I know, but I can't charge Jews. The halacha says I'm not allowed to charge Jews. Only allowed to charge them schar batala. But if I could be charging the Akum, right?
You are?
It's much of the charge Akum.
Right.
So if I wasn't treating this Jew, I want to charge this Jew $100 for 38-second appointment. Okay, good. Now, if I didn't take him, so I could charge an Akum $100 for a 38-second appointment. For a 38-second appointment. Yeah. Okay. It has to be realistic. In other words... Right, so in Israel it would be more less clear you could do that. Exactly.
You always think the argument, what could be the fool?
So that's right. So that's already a little less muchach. In other words, right now, as things stand, there's no way for me to it's not schar batala. So it's already less obvious to start saying, well, I could have done this and this and this. Then.
Don't some say for people different mitzvah grants, you help Akum, the doctor?
Yeah, it's not, but it's not, it might be, but it's not, probably not, Begeder Hashivosalo, it's not something that would be...
What do we categorize that as? What would be the other
mitzvah? Something like that, but that, it's more of a matir. Anyway, it's a good question. It definitely would not require doing it for free, especially in a situation where the practice is not to treat patients for free. Okay. But the next question, interesting, Shaila, that's discussed over here, is exorbitant fees and extortion. So the Gemara in Bava Kamma says the following. Right, the question is, what happens if I go ahead and somebody needs medicine, and I know that if they don't get medicine right away, they're going to die. So I say, let's say the regular price for this pill is $1. Say, I want to charge you $100. And they agree. They have no choice anyway. They're going to die if they don't get it. So they say, okay, I'll pay you $100 for that one pill. So what's the halacha? So the Gemara in Bava Kamma and in Yavamo says, "Hareisha yaboreach mi beis asurim, v'haisa Ma'avores lefanav. You're running away from jail, and there's a river you need to cross. So Amar lo tol dinar vavireni. So the ferryman says, you know, he knows what's going on. And even though the normal price for crossing the river is $1 on the ferry, he charges you $100. So, en lo l'scharo. Alma amar le mishat ani bach. So you could say, yeah, I'll pay you $100. And then, when you get across the river, give him whatever the normal price is. If it's $1, you only have to pay him $1. And you could say, mishat ani bach. Even though usually when you agree to pay a fee for a service, you're obligated to pay that fee after the service is complete. But in this case, you could say Meshat Ani Bach. The Gemara says a similar thing by a Yavam who was Eino Hagun, that trying to bribe him to do Chalitza. So a similar point. So that's the Halacha. So in our Siman, the Tor quotes the Ramban as saying the same thing is true with medicine. If you go ahead and you say to the guy who tries to charge you an unreasonable amount of money, so the Shulchan Aruch says you could say I'll pay you whatever the crazy fee you're asking, and then ein lo l'scharo. Then when it comes to time to pay payment, oh, I was just joking, and pay him whatever the normal rate is. Now that case is the more straightforward case. The less straightforward case is what about for practicing medicine? What about acting as a doctor? You say to him, he says to him, you know, I will treat you, but this surgery is, I'm going to charge you $85,000, even though it only takes me an hour. So what's the halacha in that case? So this is a machlokas between the Ramban and the Ritva. The Ramban writes, and this is the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, that you do have to pay in that case. Why? The Ramban writes that in this case we can't actually assess the value of his service because chachmaso maser lo. He writes, ki haposek im harofe harbe chayv liten lo, ki chachmaso macher lo, shehishav kama. So this doctor is actually better than all the other doctors. Let's imagine, right? That's why he's able to charge $85,000 for the one-hour operation. So he's better than all the other doctors. So we can't really go ahead and say that there's a value which he's overcharging, because in this case, there is no value. But the Ritva disagrees. The Ritva says, "Ve'enu mechuvar sheharei chayev hu litroch b'chachmaso lirifu aso medin avedes gufo." Vidayo bischar tircho kapo abatel o kafia roilo. So the Ritva answers, no, not true. That really, it sounds like you would agree in theory, but here, since the doctor is obligated to cure the guy, and he's only legally allowed to take schar po abatel or kafia roilo, so therefore, even though it's true that chachmaso maser lo, and chachmaso we can't assess, but since he's chayev to do it, all he's really entitled to is schar batala, and memela, he's only entitled to schar batala, so you could pay him the schar batala and say mishat ani bach on the rest. So, but as I said, the Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Ramban. Okay, so that's it for Shin Lamed Vav. Shin Lamed Zayin and Ches are pretty straightforward. Some issues from Shin Lamed Tes. So the issue we need to focus on in Shin Lamed Tes is sadly one of the most common and difficult shilos to answer, which is dealing with end-of-life issues. Things like cessation of treatment, can you pull the plug, other such questions. So the first question we have to figure out is there a mitzvah / obligation to save a goses, and would you be able to even do it on Shabbos? So this is actually a machlokas achronim, whether you could be mechal Shabbos to save a goses. The Beis Yaakov says it's aser, the Shvus Yaakov says it's mutter, and the consensus of poskim is the view of the Shvus Yaakov. There's a mitzvah of hatzala even for goses, even if it only adds a short time to his life. The Bir Halacha quotes the Meiri, because even though the Kavachomer, strictly speaking, doesn't apply, because let's say he's not even going to, Goses, general Goses, standard Goses, isn't going to live 3 days. Right? The Halachas you saw also in the Siman is that if you know somebody's a Goses, the relatives, and you don't find out what happened to him, the relatives start Avelis 3 days afterwards. So this guy's 3 days left. So technically speaking, the famous Kavachomer of Chalal Olav Shabbos Achas Kadesh Yishmar Shabbos Harbeh doesn't apply. So that's true. But the Meiri says, yeah, but he could do other mitzvos. He could do tshuva, he could do other mitzvos. Truth is, we don't even paskin like the Meiri. We paskin that you're Mechaylo Shabbos for Chai Shah, because the Chai Achi Chai Mach. And therefore, even when, it's an interesting question, again, beyond the scope of today's shir, whether you need the Kal Vachomer, and does the Kal Vachomer set the limits in any way. But Lamaisa, we paskin that you are allowed to be Mechal Shabbos to save the life of a goat. Now, if so, so then, immediately we're struck by the psak of the Ramah, because the Ramah tells us that there are times when you are allowed to basically stop treatment or hasar samoneya. There's something, we'll talk about what this is in a moment, but there's something that's keeping this goses alive, and you're allowed to stop that thing so as to allow him to die. So if there's a chiyuv to save this guy's life, and not only that, but theoretically, if you wanted to, you could be Mechal Shabbos to save the guy's life. So how could you ever have a situation where it's mutter to be Mechal Shabbos on Shabbos, which presumably assumes that there's a chiyuv to save his life, and at the same time say, oh yeah, well, if you want to let him die, you can, in which case we're not only not saving him, but we're indirectly causing him to die. Obviously, you're not being the mitzvah of saving people's life. So how is this idea at all possible? That's the question we need to deal with, A. And B, we need to then figure out how the examples of the Ramah apply in the modern context. What does it mean practically? So let's take a look at the Shulchan Aruch. You had a question first?
Yeah, just how do you define a goses?
Oh, so it's a very good question, how to define a goses. What I would say is that there's two types of gosesim. There's the standard goses, and then there is the goses that we're discussing in our simon, in the Ramah. The standard goses is someone who is basically irreversibly terminally ill and is going to die very soon. Like we said, within 3 days we could be sure he would die, such that we would even begin avelos. That's what it says in Sif Beis. We would even, if a relative is informed that their relative was a goses 3 days ago, they begin sitting Sheva. In other words, a goses is someone who's terminally, irreversibly ill. If you look at the Ramah elsewhere, in Eben HaEzer and in Choshen Mishpat, he gives certain definitions. Someone who talks about bringing up secretions from his throat, and there's constrictions in his chest and the like. Rav Moshe has a tshuva, and he says that it's not limited to those things. And the Ramah says the Chevra Kedisha knows what a goses is. So you could ask the Chevra Kedisha. That's the classical goses. Now, what we're talking about in our simon, it seems to be something else. It could be. There's some poskim that say, no, we're talking about the classical goses in our simon, but doesn't seem to be. Because we're talking about in our simon a goses lizman arach. Right? Now, a goses lizman arach is obviously not the classical goses. It seems to be our simon, and that's not a, though it's a term that's used in our simon, it comes from the Shilte Giborim, it's not a term that appears in Shas and other Rishonim. And it's vague. It's not clear what we're talking about here. But essentially what we're talking about is, and we'll expand on a moment, we're talking about someone who, for whom the mitzvah of Hatzalah is suspended. Right? And because the mitzvah of Hatzalah is suspended, that is why we're going to allows us to indirectly bring about his death. And we'll have to define who that is, but we'll get there. So let's just start, I guess, with the Shulchan Aruch. So the Mechaber starts off by basically telling us that a goset is alive. A goset sameu kechai l'chol dvarav. Again, when Shin Lama testifala, if you want to follow along. So a goset is chai l'chol dvarav, and therefore you can't tie down his jaw, and you can't bathe him, and you can't remove a pillow from beneath him, and you can't close his eyes until he's definitely dead. And if you do close his eyes, you're chayav, you're a murderer, right? That is the psak of the Mechaber. And the reason is basically because this person is in such a precarious situation that any movement might bring about his death. So if you do anything that can move him even slightly, it would seem, you might be causing his death or causing it to come quickly. And since he's l'chai l'chol dvarav, then this is aser. Okay, that's pretty straightforward. And then the Rama says like this, haga, skip a little, v'aser ligrom lemeis sheyamos mehera. So here we have two words, right? We're going to use the word grama. Grama's aser versus hasaras hamonea, which is mutter. So it's aser ligrom lemeis sheyamos mehera. You can't be goreim him to die quicker. And he gives examples, kigon misha hayagoses man arach velo yuchlau lehiparei velo yuchal lehiparei. So his soul can't leave him. He can't leave his body. In other words, he can't die. Aser lishamet hakar bakases mitachtav. So you can't remove the pillow or the mattress from beneath him. Mikoach sheomrin sheyesh notzos miktas ofos shegarmin zeb. So what happens? He's on a nice fluffy pillow. I don't know what any of this stuff means, but apparently there are some people that say that the feathers in this pillow will prevent his soul from leaving him. So if you take away the pillow, you're causing him to die. Likewise, he says, "V'chein lo yazizenu mimakomo." You can't move him in any way. V'chein aser lasum maftechos beis haknesses tafas rosho kadei shiparid. Again, I don't know why, but some understood that putting the shul keys under his head will cause him to die, so that's aser. In all those cases, you're being goreim, you're causing him to die quickly, and that's aser. Aval, im yesh sham davar shegoreim ikuv yitzias neshama, kegon sheyesh shamach l'oso bayis kol dofek, kegon chotev etzim. So, there's some type of thing that is preventing the soul's departure, such as a person chopping wood, sheyesh melach al hashono, where there's a salt on his tongue, and again, the salt on his tongue is preventing the departure of the soul. Beilum akren yitzias hanefesh. So then, mutar lasiro, you could stop the banging outside, which will cause him to die. You could remove the salt, which will cause him to die. Why is this mutter? Dein b'zeh maisa klal. You're not doing a maisa that's going to misa. Ela shemesir hamoneah. What are you doing? You're removing the moneah. And as I said, this is from a Shilta Giborim, which is maybe sort of rooted in a Brisa Maseches Machos. So that's what the psak of the Rama is. So again, here we have the question, which is, you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos to save this guy's life. And at the same time, we're saying you're allowed to be Mesir the Moneah to cause him to die. So how is this possible? So we're going to answer that question in a moment. First of all, the Taz and the Shach just bring up a Pashat question in understanding the Rama, which is, how is it mutter? Why do we say it's mutter to remove the salt, but it's also to remove the pillow? In both cases, we seem to be doing the same thing. There's something keeping him alive, whether it's the feathers or the salt. In one case we say it's mutter, one case we say it's aser. So the Taz and the Shach understand that the iser stems from the ability to move or to touch the goses. The problem is that is only when there's movement. The Taz therefore thinks removing the piece of salt would be aser, because to take the salt off his tongue is going to cause movement, and therefore it would be aser. And the Shach and the Nekuda Sakasaf says, no, the movement of the that's involved in taking away the salt is so minimal that it's mutter. And that's the basis of the Ramah. So there's a certain threshold, according to the Shach, in the prohibition of movement. And as long as that threshold isn't passed, so then it's mutter, and I guess taking away a pillow will shake the chola up, that's aser, but taking away a piece of salt from his tongue or whatever it is would be mutter. Okay, so that's pshat. But now the more basic fundamental question, which is, how could it be mutter? Isn't there mitzvah hatzalas nefashos? And again, we're even mechal Shabbos to do it. How in the world can, therefore, this be permitted? So there are a number of answers to this question with obviously huge practical implications. So one approach is taken by Rabbi Bleich in a number of articles. And Rabbi Bleich says that taka it's a stira. It doesn't make any sense to say that you're allowed to be mechal Shabbos to save this guy's life, and at the same time, you're also allowed to not treat him, if you wish, not only not treat him, but bring about his death. So therefore, Rabbi Bleich says that you do have a chiyuv to do whatever you can to save his life always. Aye, what about this psak of the Rambam? Says, what are we talking about over here? We're not talking about therapeutic treatments. Wood chopping? Salt? Who ever heard of this? This is not in any medical textbook. This doesn't make any sense. These are skuli. They're skulos. Skulos are different than medicine. How you define it, it's not always so clear, especially in the olden days when there was perhaps less rigorous scientific process and the like. But the halacha recognizes, and perhaps in other areas of halacha you see this as well, that there's a difference between formal medical treatment and skulos. So when it comes to skulos, you want to stop a skula, so echves, you know, so then that's okay. But if it's actually medical treatment, so then it's not only is it usher to remove therapeutic treatments, but you have a chiyuv to do it. And if this is true, so then our simin has nothing to do with halacha lemaisa when it comes to actual medical treatment. Okay, lots of people do skulas also nowadays. That hasn't gone out of style. But when it comes to actual medical treatment, then there's no relevance to our simin. That's Rabbi Bleich's view. Obviously, just to say, it goes without saying that anything we're talking about throughout this, we're not, it isn't lemaisa, but certainly what we're doing today is, these questions are very difficult. They're mamish life and death shilas, and one should only, should you need a very experienced osef to help solve these practical questions. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, in the Tshuva Mincha Shlomo, disagrees with the premise of the question. He says, maybe it's not true. There are other achronim as well. They say, no, it's possible that if you wish to save a person, you may do so. And not only that, but you could even be Mechal Shabbos to do so. But at the same time, you're not obligated to do so. And the way Rosh Shlomo Zalman says it is like this. A God-fearing person would wish to maintain, to remain alive as long as possible, despite the potential suffering. And this is the path of tzaddikim. And therefore, if somebody is a goses, and they're even a goses l'zman arach, but they wish to remain alive despite, let's say, incredible pain, not only you're allowed to even be mechal Shabbos to save their life, but not everybody can attain such levels of kedusha, and the halacha therefore permits passively allowing a suffering goses to die. You can never actively do anything to hasten his death, whether he's healthy or a goses, but you are allowed to indirectly and passively allow his death. And it's his choice. In other words, as opposed to, let's say, the premise of the question, which is that any time you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos, you're chayev to be Mechal Shabbos and to save his life. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, well, that's obviously typically the case when you have a normal person who's sick. You can't just say, oh, I'm not going to be Mechal Shabbos. Of course not. But you can have a situation where, and we'll have to define it a little better, but you could have a situation where it's up to the patient. And if the patient says, I want to live a little longer, then you're mitzvah to save him, and you could even be Chal Shabbos to save him. But if he also says, I can't bear to live in this state of agony, and I want to be put out of my misery, and the like, if he meets the criteria of Goz Yisrael Zman Aruch, we'll again have to define those criteria a little better, so then he has that right. And in that case, there's no mitzvah to save his life. And not only that, but one can facilitate his death in a way that's described by the Shulchan Aruch. So that is the view of Rosh Shlomo Zalman, as well as many other poskim.
Rosh Shlomo Zalman is saying that the discrepancy is
there's no stira. You could have a situation where you could be Mechal Shabbos to save his life, and even during the week, you could decide we're going to stop new treatment and allow him to die.
And that's not necessarily totally on the person's own decision?
If the person is capable of making a decision, obviously it's going to be his choice.
Right.
Again, it gets more tricky when he can't make a decision. And we'll talk about that as well. But at least in a case where the person is capable of making the decision, it's his choice. And that's, he says, the ways of tzaddikim are to try to stay alive as long as they can. But that's not a chiyuv.
But then the person wants to decide, I don't want to drive to the hospital on Shabbos.
Only if they're in this situation. If they're, again, we haven't defined the situation, but if a person, normally, if a person says, I don't want to drive to the hospital on Shabbos, that's committing suicide, and they're chayev, they must chayev b'nafsha. And if you listen to them, they're your shofir damim. And but in this case, so obviously, if you're allowed to stop treatment, right, you're allowed to remove the salt from his mouth that's keeping him alive, so it's pasha, you don't have to drive to the hospital. That's pasha, right? If you're in a situation where you can bring about his death, so obviously that takes for granted that there's no chiyuv of hatzalah. That's pasha. Whatever the Rama's talking about, he's talking about a case, unless you take Rabbi Blech's approach, that there is a chiyuv of hatzalah, and this is just talking about non-therapeutic treatments. But if we don't take Rabbi Blech's approach, so then, obviously we're talking about a situation where there's no chiyuv of hatzalah. So Rav Shlomo Zalman is saying, yeah, you could have a situation where there's no chiyuv of hatzalah, but it's mutter, and even if you wish, you could be a Mechal Shabbos.
All these things, though, that the Rama's talking about, it seems like the question doesn't apply for a different reason. All these things that the Rama's talking about are being mostly the Munea.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. There's a Chiyav Hatzalah.
No, but Chiyav Hatzalah means you're doing something active.
If I'm Chayav to do something active, it's Pashat, I can't be Meser HaMonea.
What I'm saying is that there's no case in which we can create which involves you actively violating Shabbos.
No, an active violation of Shabbos is to actively being matzil. It goes without saying that if you're allowed to be meser hamoneah, you're not chayv to be matzil. You can't say both things.
That's true, but the point is that those two things never come together.
Of course they do. This case, the Rama is saying, not only are we not chayv to be matzil, but we're even allowed to be meser hamoneah.
In this case.
So anytime you're in this case, right? Anytime you're in this case, person's a ghost is at home. Ghost is Zman Aruch. If you take him to the hospital, you could get him to live a little longer.
Yes,
so it's pashut that if you're allowed to be Mesha Moneah, you're not chayv to drive to the hospital. That's Kava Chomer. Lachas Kama Vakama. Right? If I'm allowed to be Mesha Moneah, there's no
chayv. There's a different hate for him to keep him alive, though. You utilize a different hate for him to keep him alive. Right now he's fine. He's staying home.
He's about to die. Right. So, I don't understand at all what you're saying. If I'm allowed to kill him, obviously I don't have to save him. In this case, I'm allowed to kill him. Right. Not obviously only kill him through asar samoneya, but in this case I'm allowed to kill him, so obviously I don't have to save him, right? So during the week I don't have to save him, certainly on Shabbos I don't have to save him. But if he wants to live, I can save him. Not only could I save him, but I could be Mechal Shabbos to save him. So you have a situation where the guy wants to die, I could kill him. Again, not kill him, but to facilitate his death through Asar Samoneya. But at the same time, if he wants to live, then I'm allowed to save him. And again, other poskim take this approach as well. Now, the idea is basically as follows. This is the way Rabbi Willig puts it, as well as others, is that the chiyuv to cure people, as we saw in the tour, is vashev osalo. And, right, v'chai bohem is the heter l'chal Shabbos. But the mitzvah to cure a person is vashev osalo. Just like a Shabbos Aveda is only when it's good for a person. So the yesod of our simen is that when you have a person which is tov lo moso mechayim, someone for whom death is preferable to life. So there's no mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, of Hashivosolo, because for such a person, death is preferable to life. Now, if you have a situation where a person is young, and something happens, and with medical treatment, they could say, you know, they could live many, many more years. Okay, it might even not be the most pleasant life, but so we're not going to say in that case, tov lo moso mechayim, we have to cure him. Even if he says, I want to die, we won't listen. We have to do whatever we can to save his life. But there is such a situation of tov lo moso mechayim, and there are many places in Shas where you see such concepts exist. You could say some of them are agadita, the story of the city where people didn't die because they told the truth. They were allowed to, when it was ready, when their time came, they were allowed to leave the city. The story of Rebbe dying, where the shifcha broke the thing so people would stop davening, and the like. There are situations where the Gemara acknowledges that a person can feel, and if they can't describe this, you know, we could say, if we think it's true, of tov lo mavis michayim. Again, we have to know for sure. But when you have that situation of tov lo moso michayim, so then there's no mitzvah of hatzala. The shivosu law doesn't apply. And therefore, once there's no mitzvah of hashava, though, while we're never allowed to kill him, but we're not obligated to save him either. So, and that is the situation that we're talking about over here, of the goseis lizman arach. Where Shachter puts it a little differently is that while a person doesn't have full ownership right over their body, they do have a certain level of ownership as to what's considered pikuach nefesh. He brings an interesting proof from the Morg Tzia that we force a patient to undergo therapy when the outcome is a certain cure. But if a complete cure cannot be guaranteed or close to guaranteed, and there's possible negative side effects, so it's the patient's decision to determine whether or not we're doing him a favor by extending his life. And Rav Moshe also has a number of tshuvos in which he says that it's usher to extend life at the expense of suffering. Now, Rav Moshe has a couple of caveats, as does Rav Shechter. Number one is, like we said before, when it's clear that an overwhelming majority of people would prefer to undergo a certain treatment, we ignore the patient's personal refusal. So if the patient's wishes are overwhelmingly seen as unreasonable, so then we do force therapy based off of Shmatim Ad L'Nefesh Osechem. But there are cases where we say it's up to the patient. And again, the Geder... So Rav Moshe assumes that this is only true when there's a lot of pain. So it would seem that according to Rav Moshe, if you had a situation where we could know that this fellow is experiencing no pain, right? Zero pain. He's not conscious of the light. Then the question is, can you, again, be Maser Amoneh to bring about his death? So Moshe says, no, because you're allowed to do this to put him out of pain. If there's no pain, then it would be Aser. Moshe says that's true, though. He says that's not necessarily the case that you could trust doctors to say that there's no pain. Maybe there's pain for the neshama trying to leave the guf. When you look at the sources over here, it sounds like the... I don't know exactly what this means, but it's the act of the neshama severing the guf is very painful. But that's Rav Moshe's view. Theoretically, we have to know he's in pain, but it might be that we assume that he is in pain. Rav Willig and Rav Zalman Nechemia don't agree. They say, no, anytime you have a situation of tov moso mechayev, even if theoretically there isn't pain, still that's enough to say there's no mitzvah of hatzalah. Okay.
So the neshama leaving the body?
Yeah. Right, so the separation of the neshama and the guf.
Right, that's the reversal.
No. The when the neshama is trying to leave the body and is unable to leave the body, that's a painful experience. The process of dying is painful, and when it's extended, so then that's a painful situation. That's what Rav Moshe writes. So the question then is, assuming that we accept what we've said until now, what exactly can you do besides the case of that are mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch? So let's say removing a ventilator. So the pasha pshat is removing a ventilator would be usher. Why? Because that's like taking away the pillow. That is, something is happening, and then you're directly causing his death as opposed to indirectly causing his death. So, because right now it's happening, and you're stopping it from, you're stopping the treatment. There are those who argued, no, it's not true. In other words, when you unplug the ventilator, as it were, so the you're just stopping the pumping of air, and the mela, that also is a hasara samoneya. So pulling the plug, according to those poskim, would be okay. But most poskim don't accept that. Most poskim say that that would be more like removing the pillow, right, where the feathers are keeping him alive, and that's aser. So what would be mutter? So the answer is that if he has not yet started treatment, you don't have to put him on the ventilator or the respirator. But if he's on it, you can't stop it, which is what many poskim say. Now, even that isn't so simple, because a number of poskim say that we're going to be mechalek between medical treatment, which you don't have to start, versus things that are meant to mimic basic living functions, like food or liquids or air. So a number of poskim say that you can't stop a feeding tube, and you might even always be chayev to put in the feeding tube because that's nutrition. Others say again, no, you know, you can't stop the feeding tube, but you might not have to refill it. So this is even with ventilators, used to actually be easier because you'd have to change the tank every so often when the oxygen would run out. So some poskim said, okay, so don't put the, once you have to take it off, you don't have to put it back. Nowadays, there's a constant, in hospitals at least, flow of oxygen, generally speaking, so you don't have to change the tank. Ray Willick has an interesting theory. Just to say before we get back to that, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, as I said that passively withholding treatment is only limited to medical therapies. So food, oxygen, since they're considered basic human needs, they can never be removed. And Rav Shlomo Zalman also differentiates between interventions that, again, fulfill the basic needs and those that are exceptional or extraordinary. Sometimes it's hard to figure out which one is which, like insulin for diabetes or antibiotics for bacterial infections or dialysis for kidney. Which side do those fall on? And the post can discuss this. It's not always so clear. But Willig thinks, at least in the case of a brain death, that let's say you have a brain dead person. So some postkin might say that brain dead people are actually dead. So then obviously it's not a shaila. But it's very hard to be machri on that question, because other postkin say brain dead people are alive. So it's very hard to say that you could definitively treat someone brain dead as dead. But you can. If someone actually is brain dead, you could be sure they're not coming back. Now, when I say actually is brain dead, it's also an important thing to keep in mind, because a lot of times the Harvard criteria aren't met and doctors say they're brain dead and they're not brain dead. And like, well, let's say someone's actually really, really brain dead. So, and they're on a ventilator. Sometimes you have a situation where, especially if you're dealing with a young, healthy person on a ventilator, they could live for a very long time. So Ray Willig thought that maybe under certain circumstances, let's say the ventilator is on 100% oxygen, 20 breaths per minute. So we said that you're not allowed to deprive them of air. But what's normal air, right? What percentage is oxygen? Who here remembers their science? 21%, something like that, right? So you can reduce it to 21% oxygen. Or normally, how many breaths per minute do you take? Eight, right? So you could reduce it to that, and that will likely cause them bring about their death much more quickly. But obviously, again, mercy killing is never mutter, at least for a Jew. It's interesting, Shiloh, could you, what about Gaia? Actually killing someone to put them out of pain, right? The story of Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion in the Gemara. So, Chinim ben Tradion refused to allow himself to die quickly, but at the same time, he promised the executioner, Olam Haba, if he basically caused him to die more quickly. So some folks can think that that the Isser for non-Jews, the definition of murder for Jews and non-Jews is different. Ritzicha versus Shvichas Damim. And that is kulas and chumras, but this might be an example where we make such a chilak. It's an interesting discussion, but I think also beyond what we're doing today. So since it looks like everybody's asleep anyway, we'll stop here. And again, today, later on in the day, maybe at the end of the day, when you guys are all wide awake, we will continue with. We'll do two things today. Again, number one is a little bit on the Rishonim, the reasons that the Rishonim give for Avelos, the Ramban, and the like, and then finally the Iker will be on whether Avelos is Deraisa or Lav Deraisa, and the Iker Avodah Nat is to go through the Ramban, which I think you all have. Okay.